What's up, Airheads? We're back once again in the virtual Airstream studios. It's time for another stirring rendition of Putting on Airs. I'm Trey, and that's Cho. Cho, first things first, how are you feeling?
Man,
my man's been under the weather, y'all.
Bad, dude. Like, I feel like a wind, like anybody that's like a follows me on Substack, that, you know, because I, whenever I'm sick, I always write about it. Like, I write about my symptoms and what shows I'm watching or whatever, trying to keep some sort of dialogue going. And I feel like this year, and I put it to him, I was like, do y'all feel like there's been a month go by this year where I haven't at least made one, sorry guys, I'm under the weather post? And they're like, no, absolutely not. And I was like, yeah, I've just been fucking, and it's like, I don't know if it's like after I got COVID the first time, now everything just hits me like bricks, or if it's the like baby and the exhaustion.
Is.
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
it's all of that, I think. It's not, yeah, because I mean, I've noticed too, you've been sick a lot over the past few months, but like, I don't think that's weird. It's hard for me to remember that far back at this point. My kids are 11 and 12, but I just know, you know, like kids, babies, especially, you know, they're little petri dishes and they don't have an immune system and all that stuff. And like you said, you're exhausted. So your body's defenses are weakened and, you know, you've got this little petri dish that just gets passed around to everybody because everybody wants to love on it and touch on it and all that stuff. And it makes it nasty, right? And then
hand,
you got to handle
it. Second grade teacher.
Oh, yeah, that too, of course, right.
You know what I
so,
mean? And that's what I've always talked. But I was like, but see, the thing about it is like, because Amber's a second grade, Amber never gets sick, which is why, by the way, this past week, we were all sick in my house, and it hit Amber first, and she was like deathly ill, and I braced for cover because I was like, oh, my God, if this is making her sick, I'm about to be fucked up. And, buddy, I sure was, man. It was one of them, like, The headache never went away sick. I was having the wildest fever dreams, dude. Like, just fucking waking up, pouring sweat. Every single one of them was about stand-up. In every single fever dream, I was on my way to a show, but I was sick, and the booker kept telling me I had to go on. And, like, you remember that when we first started doing stand-up, the dreams you'd always have was, like, you're late to the show, or they just threw you on stage, and they told you to do an hour, but you only got 10 minutes?
I still have those dreams all the time.
I haven't in a long time, but...
It's now it's like, yeah, you're thrown up. Oh, go up there and do an hour or whatever. And then I get up there and it's like, I know that I'm still me. I'm still the present day version of me, but it all just leaves me in the dream. Like,
I
get up there and I have nothing. I have no idea what to say. I can't recall my actual jokes in real life or whatever. It's always something like that. Dude, I still have dreams where I'm in college and I've like not gone to a class all semester. Yeah. Like, I forgot I was enrolled in the class and now I'm going to fail it or whatever.
I have that too, but I didn't even go to college.
I still have dreams about waiting tables sometimes, which was my job when I was in college, about being in the weed drill bag and getting my ass whipped. I still have dreams about working at the DOE sometimes. Normally nowadays they take the form of like, I've had to go back to the DOE and work there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's common for people to have those types of dreams. But for me, even when I move on in my life, I still will pull from that old Rolodex of dream sources, like just for the rest of my days, evidently, I guess.
Yeah. For the past week that I've been sick, every single night has been the scariest, most realistic fever dream of me fucking up my comedy career. Cause in your dream, you know, in real life, it don't work like this, but in the dream, you having this bad set in Greenville is the end of your career. You know what I mean? Or like you fucking over the club owner cause you couldn't find it. Cause like I'm on my way to the club, but I'm walking down the street and my feet are in sand. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's fucking right there. So it's been brutal. And to say that I feel better is true. 100% true because of how bad I felt. But I'm at that phase in recovery now where I'm like, I'm not sick, but I got nothing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. where you're just like, I got nothing. Like, there's no creative juices flowing in my fucking head. I have no energy. And so I'm just straight on caffeine. But I am happy to talk to you because it's been a fucking minute. We haven't really spoken since Nashville because we had so many things in the bank. And that, by the way, didn't help either. Nashville, being a dad with the petri dish and being exhausted and then having that weekend, I'm dead for a month.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You said you got nothing in the tank, no creative juices flowing. Bodes well for this episode because I was actually wondering.
I can fake it, baby.
Do you have a topic on hand for us this time? Because I've got some more minutia. That's what I'm working with today.
I wanted me and you to talk a little bit about the wild career of one Robert Evans. Maybe toss a little Al Ruddy in there. In full transparency, this is a borderline cheat because I didn't have the energy to like prepare my normal syllabus that I would do for putting on airs. However, I just finished reading The Kid Stays in the Picture. It's fresh in me. You know what I mean? Me and you could wax poetic about old Hollywood shit forever. And I've been wanting to talk to you about the book since I read it. We've texted a little bit, but it's not the same.
Yeah, that sounds fun. We'll get to that a little later. You're talking about fever dreams. I don't think I've told this on here before, but I think about this sometimes. So I will never forget this. I was like 18 or 19, and I was real bad sick.
Chin
real
strap?
Real high fever. This might have been pre-chin strap. Chin strap was like 20 to 23 era Trey. Right. That's my age. I mean, age of 20, age 23. And this was like 18, 19. I was still a teenager and I was real bad, sick, had a high fever and all this stuff. And I was in my bedroom in Salina and I'd like fallen asleep, like burritoed up in a blanket. Cause I was burning up, but I had the chills at the same time.
Sweating
and cold at the same time, but I had like passed out cause I was so exhausted and sick and fucked up and had all these insane fever dreams that I don't remember, but they were like crazy and almost like Lovecraftian or something. You know what I mean?
It was fun.
Like trans-dimensional terrors and stuff, like horrors that I couldn't process in my fever. It was like that type of fever dream. And I don't know how long it lasted, but I like woke up, I came to, and I was burritoed up in this blanket, drenched in sweat, like soaking wet with sweat. And I felt this, I could smell myself, right?
But
it's not how I normally smell when I'm sweating.
It's fear.
It's not. And I lay there and I was like, God, that's such a weird smell. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
That's me. What is that? And as an 18-year-old in my head, I was like, that's the smell of fear. That's what that is. I was like, that's what you hear people talk about the smell of fear. Well, I was like, that's what fear smells like. And to this day, I don't know if that's at all accurate or true, but it's always stuck in my head ever since. I can't describe the smell, but if I smelled it right now, I would go, that's the fucking smell of fear when I was 18 years old. So, yeah,
it's how I
think about that a lot.
For the past week on the couch. Because like you said, I'm fucking freezing. I'm in 900 blankets. I'm also wearing a Snuggie. I've got two pairs of sock on. I'm freezing, but I'm sweating my fucking ass off. And when I woke up and I took the Snuggie off and I smelt it, I had the same thing. I was like, my sweat smelled like regular sweat, but this shit, it smelled. And I thought the same thing when you brought that up. I was like, is that fear or is that like adrenaline sweat? Because I assume... we would be the same thing.
Pretty much the same thing. You know?
Yeah. But and like your adrenal glands, like it's a gland, it secretes out because like in all of my dreams, I was fucking terrified, but it was also like super heightened. And I was like, you know, running from shit. And like when I woke up, that's like, I don't know why it wouldn't be that. Like, I don't think we even need to look it up. Like that is fear, you know?
Yeah. Shit's wild.
The stink of desperation.
Yeah, could also be that. Well, either way, I'm glad you're feeling better. Like I said, I've just got some minutia for you, and so I figured we'll go ahead and get into that. I'm trying to decide what I want to start with. I got to share my screen here. I guess we'll do this. Let's see this one. Tell me, you seeing my screen there? You should be able to hear it too.
Oh, I am. Is this a okay? That's a banana, and someone's about to eat it with a fucking fork and knife. At first, I thought it was one of them like fancy omelets that you cut down the Japanese omelets. You cut down the center, and it explodes out. I really want one of them.
I think that's called like omariche or omariche or something. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm butchering the pronunciation of it, but yeah, it's like a weird Japanese omelet that they cut down the middle, and it like. It just is then juicy and all the egg juice gets all over the rice that's underneath it and stuff. It's always looks like it hits to me too.
I want you to continue, but since we're doing minutia in this episode, put a pin in eggs. Go on.
Okay. Pen and eggs. No, that's not an omelet you see there. It is a banana, as you said. This is an informational video demonstrating to people how the Queen of England eats a banana, or would eat a banana. This is obviously from when the Queen was alive. So here we go.
This is how the Queen would eat a banana. We don't peel it like a primate. Instead, using the fork, we hold it in place and cut off one end. Then we cut off the other end, and then we turn the knife on its side and go into the skin like so, and then prising it open, and then cut a little bit off and eat like so.
Well, if you need any more reason to be glad she's dead, yeah, that's so stupid. Like, I get, like, oh, only primates open the banana with their hands. Let your fucking servant do it.
Well, also, what's funny about that to me is, like, we don't own it with our hands like a primate. It's like, oh, yeah, those stupid don't know shit about bananas primates.
Those monkeys,
up there. Like,
yeah, right.
Honestly, no one understands how to eat bananas less than fucking primates. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, why see what the monkeys are doing? Matter of fact, I've seen the opposite before on the internet, like, years ago, and I switched immediately. It like went viral.
Pitching it the other way?
About 8, 10 years ago, it went viral. It's like, y'all know this is how monkeys eat bananas. And it was like, we've been doing it wrong our whole lives. You open it from the other end.
Yeah, because we grab the notch and go.
Right.
And I
saw that, and I've done it that way ever since. And it is better. Imagine it's way better. Monkeys be knowing about bananas. If you're not a fucking uppity elitist who looks down on monkeys, you would understand that monkeys know about bananas. So, yeah, maybe take a page out of the monkey's book when it comes to eat bananas. Queen Elizabeth, who's dead.
Right. And also, for those of you who are just listening and need some further information, it's not just that it's a better way to open the banana, which it is. It's a better way to open the banana. But also, it affects the grain of the banana. You know what I mean? Like, right, when you peel a banana the way that we normally peel it, which is to take the notch and click it, all those strings, it gets stringy and shit like that. If you go from the other side, it doesn't do that because it goes with the grain. So, like, it's not just like, oh, a preference of how to open it. It does make the banana hit harder. So, yeah,
it does.
Dude, fuck the Queen.
Right. In her grave.
Yep.
But the other thing that's funny about that is, like, we don't eat with our hands like a primate. It's like, what do you think humans are? Like, even the Queen and or now King, even them, they are primates. We are all primates. Like, you ain't no better than primate. You know, I don't care how uppity
the prime
you is.
Primates, but still.
Right, but we're still primates, though. But yeah.
Right.
There's people in the comment section on this claiming, I didn't look into him any further, but there's people in there being like, don't be too hard on this guy. This guy's actually kind of cool. He just has like a, he's just got a special interest in etiquette things. And this video makes him look worse than he is or whatever. It's like, he's actually an all right guy. I don't know. But anyway, I just thought it was funny and on brand for this show to, you know, it's like that Seinfeld episode with the Snickers bar, like the Queen of England really be doing that, you know, with bananas. It made me wonder though, like, what, how does she like, you might know this. Like, what about, like, again, I know she's dead. Before she was dead, like, wiping her royal butthole, right? Like,
there's no way she did it, right?
Right. She had to have a person, because we covered once on the show before, there was that,
that used
something
to be a job.
Of the stool, the knight of the stool,
the
master of the stool, or something like that. It was
a royal position.
Yeah, it was a sought-after job, a royal position. They accompanied the king or queen into the bathroom and attended them in the bathroom while they were blowing their butt out and all that. And ostensibly, that's gone now. But, like,
well, she probably
tell
got
me
a
Queen
bidet,
Elizabeth
I guess.
Was wiping her own butt. Ah, there you go.
Yeah,
but see, that's French, and anything French don't hit for them. Like,
well, okay,
it probably hits harder for them to have an underling, a peasant, wipe your ass than to have a French instrument. Wash your ass, you know? I mean, that's just, I'm speculating here. I don't know. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, they probably have like an underling come hit it with a hose. You know what I mean? So it's like a deconstructed bidet. You know what I mean? Which those fancy people love deconstructed things. But yeah, I would say that, but to your point though, I would say that, like, there's surely to God, there was never one time, because Elizabeth, she was who she was from the moment she was born. Like, well, I mean, she wasn't destined to be queen the moment she was born, but very soon after that, after the abdication, it was like, this is who you going to be. But even as a princess, like, I would say there was never one time where her hand grabbed a piece of paper and touched it to her booty hole. Like, when would that have happened? Right? Can't be. Like, why the fuck are you going to be the queen?
Right. It's kind of weird to me that this hasn't been a more public thing that's been talked about.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I would have thought this would come up because, like, it's just real hard for me to believe that she was in there, like, wiping her own poopy butt. I just don't buy it.
I brought this up one time, but I think that if you had, like, a round-robin tournament of, like, stinkiest poops in the world, late-age Queen Elizabeth's poops, I bet were wild because old people's be that way anyways, and they be eating a lot of wild pheasant and eggs, you know what I mean? And, like, I don't know. She just, like, I just looked at her and Philip in their later years, and I was just like, You know, like, when you worked at a restaurant and you would, like, go in the bathroom after an old person had been in there, and it was way different than when even a younger, fatter person had been in there. It was
just kind of like how that fear sweat hit different than regular sweat.
Old-ass
poop, it hits different than regular poop. I have a vivid, like, flashbulb memory of being at a redneck pool hall in Cookeville, Tennessee, and I needed to piss real bad, and I went over to the bathroom, and it was locked, so I stood outside waiting on it, and this dude, this, like, big, fat old boy with a Santa beard who was probably 75 years old, wearing overalls, right, like, country-ass Santa. He, like, stumbles out, like, whoo, whatever. And I went in there, and I could still...
No redneck has ever taken a shit and walked out without letting you know. Woo!
Right. And that's another scent that, to this day, I will, you know, again, I can't describe it. But if I smelled it again I'd be like, that's old redneck butt. That's what that is. Because, it smelled different than any other poop I'd ever smelled up until that point in my life. It is... It is weird.
Like, them old people be having digestive troubles where, like, they'll just go, like, 2 weeks without pooping. So when they finally do poop, that's a 2-week-old poop in there. Like, it's been getting extra poopy, you know?
Yeah. So I'm trying to find out, like, do the recent royals, do they wipe their own ass or not?
No.
And, like...
Charles May, just to be different, because he's always been trying to be more like the modern king. And, like, nowadays we wipe our ass, children. But I still think it's, like... you know, aside from the joke you made about the French, which hit for me, like, surely they got a goddamn bidet.
It's funny because, like, you Google it and all the top results, they're, like, conflicting and it's people speculating and stuff. Like, it seems like it's not a...
No official...
There's no official stance on it. Yeah, it's not, like, it's not part of the official record, evidently, even nowadays. Because there's results saying, no, they don't. They have someone for that. And they reference, like, it was called the groom of the stool, by the way, was the, that was the position we were talking about earlier. They reference that. Then other people are like, listen, it's the modern era. Yeah. Of course they wiped their own ass. Whatever. No. Yeah. And then, I can't find like an official response here.
I think we can all agree that no, they don't do it themselves. The discrepancy here is on what method they use instead. You know what I mean? Whether they have,
peasant
someone in there
or French hose, French butt hose.
It'd be really putting one over on the French if they hired a French servant just to wipe their ass. Jacques bidet.
All right, so let's see, what do we want to do next? We'll do this one because it's also should be pretty quick. It's kind of in a similar vein. Let's pull this up real quick. I'm sorry to anybody that only listens to the show. We'll try to...
This is good promo to watch it at watchpoa.com. It's the best way to enjoy the program.
Well, so you understood what happened last time. It was a guy with a banana, right? You got it. So this here is a fancy cocktailologist, a fancy mixologist, I think, in Japan, plying his trade. And this is some overly fancy shit. So watch this video and then we'll talk about it. I'm going to leave the audio off though, cause I know that the only audio in this is like weird. It's weird music, right? Which could fuck us.
Cause
music be weird. There's no talking or anything else. We don't need the audio. So I'm just going to hit it without it. Yeah. Got to set the bar on fire first.
Of course.
His movements. Look how deliberate and robotic his movements are.
That's
Ice
people.
Ninja. Look at that. Watch this.
Oh, yeah.
The ice and the glass spinning.
I like that ice, too. That was a big old chunk.
Man, look at this guy. Glass. Don't hit to drink out of it if it ain't been spent. Did you see that? Did you see how he presented the whiskey after? The dude's boba scrap.
This looks like a Bond movie.
He's a huge fan of this, what is this, liquid nitrogen or whatever this is.
That's like foam and food stuff. To me.
Right, I agree. It's just nothing but parlor tricks. It don't amount to shit, but it's like, he puts a, look at that. He it's seems cool. to have frozen the drink using liquid nitrogen, so it's like a slushy, it's a boozy slushy that he puts a pretty flower on top of and surrounds with smoke, and then I'm assuming looks at you and says, that'll be $115 or whatever. What I thought about this is like, and I don't even watch anime, but this dude, he seems like a bartender in an anime or something. You know how anime is just like so extra, like all the special effects and shit that's going on in the,
swishes,
the comic booky movements and stuff that he's doing. It's like a bartender in an anime or something like that. But also, I mean,
animes are pretty accurate to.
Right, to
the
Japan.
Movements of the Japanese.
Well, it's funny. I said I have no idea where this guy's at. This dude, you know, we white, we can't tell. This could be in Korea. I don't know. And also, you're playing with fire because they all hate each other, so it would be offensive to any Japanese person to be called Korean and vice versa. I don't know where he's at over there. He could be in Koreatown, Los Angeles, for all I know.
Right,
I don't know. But he's giving me an anime vibe, and I just wonder, like. You have any interest whatsoever in going to a bar like that?
Okay, no. Like, if me and you were just like, hey, I want to go get a drink. You know, we just had a meeting or something and it didn't go well. Someone was like, hey, guess what? We're not picking up this show either, you fucking losers. Get out of town. We thought we told you 7 fucking years ago, you know. And we were going to go blow off steam. No, I'd want to go to a regular bar. But, like, now if me and you was like, you know, traveling for another book or something, or we just happen to be in Vegas and it's like, hey, this thing happens to be right here. We could go in for 1 second and get one fucking, you know, Dragon Ball Z martini. I'd be like, okay, I'm interested. But at the same time, seeing it there, I was like, yeah, I've seen it. You know, hold on, though. Let me ask you about liquid nitrogen, because I learned about liquid nitrogen when I was a kid from one of our local meteorologists who turns out was a pedophile and one time got caught at the hospital with his dick stuck in a cat. So
I remember that story. Who could
forget?
Oh,
I've told you. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
On like the Well Read podcast, you told us, and it was one of those moments where we were all like, we've known you for 10 years and what, which those moments happen every week with you. But that one was one I was not soon to forget. Yes.
I don't know if I told you how it happened though. He was like, obviously, everybody knows he's fucking a cat.
Figure out how it happened.
But what happens is when a cat gets scared, apparently, like, its asshole muscles are like the jaws of a python. It can just, like, and it just, like, stays there, and you can't do shit about it, you know, without, like, a numbing agent. Any fucking ways, this dude showed us liquid nitrogen and shit.
Lord God. Useful information to some of y'all out there. I don't know, but Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Well, anyways, so when we were learning about liquid nitrogen as kids, it was always like, hey, y'all don't come up here because if any of this gets on your finger and then the wind blow too quick, your finger will fall to dust and blow the fuck off. And then, but now I see people like this allegedly Japanese feller just using liquid nitrogen with great aplomb, with no like gloves or like hazmat suits or like worry at all. So like, was the dick cat fucker lying, or are these people just risking it all?
Buddy, I have absolutely no idea. I'm smoky ice dumb. There's also like,
me too.
Dry ice. Let me look this up. You know, there's also dry ice.
Yeah, which is different.
Right.
I guess.
And it does the same thing, right? Doesn't it? You can't breathe it. It's also dangerous. You can't touch it without gloves, whatever, yada, yada. I don't know. I guess
but they'd be
just
like packing crab in it and sending it to your fucking house off Uber Eats, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess they're just relying on people having some sense, which doesn't seem smart to me. But
dry ice, wild.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
wet
all
ice
that shit, wow,
is what I'm more familiar with.
Yeah, I just, my thing with stuff like this is like, I don't really know how to react to things like this, which is why I don't really want to experience them. Meaning, like, if I was in that bar,
that's
and this
a good
happened,
attitude.
I would just, well, I would just be sitting there like,
oh,
man. That was sure was cool, you know, or whatever. Which
can you
is
make
like
a volcano
that,
out of the onions and throw a shrimp in my mouth, buddy.
I'm sure that, yeah, right. Yeah, just get really redneck with it. What other China stuff can you do over here? Yeah. We're just juggle shrimp, goddammit. Feed us something. Yeah, right. Thought y'all were into that. Yeah. But like, do you remember? I remember asking Drew about this, and he didn't remember this. But I know that the whole period we spent writing our first book, me, you, and Drew, I know that whole period was kind of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But at one, kind of is an understatement. It was an absolute whirlwind.
It's a big
whirlwind.
Understatement.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I know. But at one point, we had like a show in Lexington and then a show in Louisville the next night. We drove between the two, and we stopped in Frankfort, Kentucky, which is on the Bourbon Trail, because we had like deadlines for chapters of the book. Yeah. So we had to stop.
Four Roses for the first time.
Exactly. We went to this bar in Frankfort on the Bourbon Trail, which was also, it was a bar, but it was also like a bourbon library.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember
that? Remember
like
that.
It was like, it's like you could order drinks, but this is also like
a museum.
Scholarly bourbon museum. That's what this is, right? So like we ordered old fashions with Four Roses and stuff, and the guy brought it out, brought them out on trays, and like, he gave us a whole like little miniature lesson on both of those things. He gave us like a little history lesson on Four Roses Distillery, and then also on the old fashioned itself and whatever. And I don't remember any of the details he told us, but like he was holding them on a tray. We're just sitting there waiting on our, you know, our whiskey drink. Yeah. And he's like doing a college class for us, because that's what they do at this place. And when we went there, we didn't even know that was a thing. We didn't go there for that. We didn't know they were going to do that. We just ended up there, and then it happened, and I liked it too. I thought it was cool, but I remember also sitting there being like, I don't know what to say to this or in response to this at the end. And of course, the thing is, they don't care. It doesn't matter.
No,
like,
they got to do it.
They just do their thing, and then, you know, they'd probably love for you to
that's their equivalent of, would you like to sign up for the Eddie Bauer credit card to get 10% off your, you know what I mean? Like, that's just their script. They got to do it. But
I think at locally owned places like that, I got the impression that, like, that dude who did that, I think they're like true believers. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they're like into it. They're like,
which
bourbon
is cool.
Professors and shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Which hits. I like that. Now, I do remember, though, he was doing all that shit before handing us the drink. And I remember thinking, why don't you sit it down and tell us all this shit? You know what I mean?
Probably because
sure,
you know, ain't nobody going to listen, you know, if you give them the drink first. We had a kind of a similar experience in Scotland. We took like a... Remember that whiskey class or whatever we took?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was awesome. But it was a similar thing. I know we talked about like
they poured us four glasses and then wouldn't shut the fuck up.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, no, drinking whiskey is part of this experience, but you have to go through this college course first. Like you have to learn all the lessons and get lectured to about this stuff that is very interesting. But until we're done, you can't touch this booze. And for two fucking, you know, trashy booze hounds like us, that's kind of tough. You're kind of sitting there like, can I just drink it while you talk about what it is, you know?
Yeah, especially
and
because...
Like, no, you can't. You got to gain an appreciation for it before we'll let you have it. It's like, okay,
especially
well,
because we went into the tasting drunk. You know what I mean? So, like, when you're drunk and someone sits drinks in front of you, you got to have it right now. You know, like,
so
if we
funny.
Had gone
into... I bet this happens all the time too. Like we took a drink of the first one. He was like, so based on everything you've learned, like, what do you guys think? Like, what's your feedback on this drink or whatever? And one of us was like, oh, I'm getting notes of
vanilla
and smoke or whatever. And the guy was like, vanilla and smoke, the two most common responses from everyone on earth. Everyone thinks that whiskey's like, you know, and we're just sitting there like, well, yeah, dude, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Right, that's why
we're
here.
It tastes like whiskey. It hits I like it. It's good, but I can't. I'm not going to write you a dissertation or whatever. I don't fucking know. Like, it hits for me. Oh, it's peaty. it's peaty and boggy or whatever the fuck else y'all got going on up here. I don't know.
Well, actually, like, let me present you with a different perspective. If the two most common responses you get are vanilla and smoke, maybe the shit tastes like vanilla and smoke. You ever thought about that shit? You know what I mean? 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong, motherfucker. If that's what everybody thinks, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so anyway, I can get down with something like this like once. But if I'm just going to a bar to do bar shit, I don't want nothing remotely like this happening anywhere near me.
No, as I've told you, man, the reason that none of my favorite bars exist anymore is because all my favorite bars are where me and two other people are, and the bartender's barely paying attention.
Right. I'm with you on that. So next up on our list of minutia is this feller. I think you added him to the doc, actually. This is a man by the name of Thomas Wetters or Thomas Wadhouse.
Yeah, boy. Look at that honker.
19th century or 1800 circus performer. If you're watching right now, you know immediately why he was in the circus. If you're only listening, I can explain it to you. He has an 8-inch nose. This some bitch apparently really lived in real life. He looks like a Dickensian caricature, but he apparently actually lived and had an 8-inch zucchini shaped snoz on his face, which is a hell of a thing.
That's how Bradley Cooper originally pitched Leonard Bernstein to look in the movie, and they shot him down. They said, scale it back a half, Bradley,
so
a half. That's,
okay, listen, since you brought that up, I didn't know that was going to come up or anything. I haven't watched the movie yet. You watched the movie,
it's
right?
Great. It's great.
Bradley Cooper plays Leonard Bernstein, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and you said it hits real hard.
It's great.
When they first put out the promo materials and stuff for that movie, he got
a lot
of shit.
Like a year and a half ago. Yeah,
he got a lot of shit because they were like, look at this fucking ridiculous fake nose he put on. Just because he's playing a Jewish man or whatever. Like, right. This is Jew face. What the fuck is this? And a lot of those articles and stuff, they put a side-by-side of Bradley Cooper in the prosthetic with Leonard Bernstein. And I was like, dude, he's fucking nailing it as far as
right.
I'm sorry. I got a big nose, too. It's okay to have a big nose.
Right.
But I'm just saying, he wants to inhabit the character, embody this man. He looks
exactly
fucking
like
him.
Yes.
What are you mad about? He's supposed to act like
right.
he didn't have a big nose when he
right.
did. It's okay.
It would be,
it's okay to have a big nose. Like, I never understood that controversy at all. Because I was like,
agree
he
with
looks
you more.
Just like him. He
right.
looks exactly fucking like him.
Dude, like, yeah. And it was like,
is that
it's
not
Bradley,
an important factor in this scandal, you know?
Right. It's Bradley Cooper's passion project. He's the one that wanted to bring it to the screen. And he, by the way, and if you see that movie, I genuinely cannot think of a, because I've seen, you know, American Masters with Leonard Bernstein. I've seen a lot of his shit. If you can tell me that there's someone out there that could have, dude, he was Leonard Bernstein. It's crazy. Like, there's this one scene at the very end of the movie when they just put Bradley Cooper and Leonard Bernstein side by side doing their maestro shit. Bradley Cooper makes his actual smile look exactly like, it's crazy. But like, yeah, so to your point, if Bradley Cooper was just in a movie and just playing a random Jewish character and he
right.
put on a Groucho Marx
right.
fucking snob,
right.
that's one thing. But like, yeah, like Leonard Bernstein had a distinct, and that's literally like almost like if they did do this to Bradley Cooper and change his hair, you've got Leonard Bernstein. Why the fuck wouldn't you do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know how this is going to come across, but like we like, okay. Here's what comes to mind. You posted a throwback picture of like a sketch you and your old high school buddies did years and years ago. It was a parody of the George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
Or the George Foreman grill. And it was the William the Refrigerator Perry
cold clam grill.
Cold clam grill. Yeah. For
it
that.
It was just a cutting board.
For that fake commercial, you guys used a picture of William the Refrigerator Perry in it. You're like,
yep,
this is his. You just literally took a picture of him.
Yep.
And when you reposted it as someone with a profile, people were like, bro, really? That's racist as hell. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, and I want to be very clear, the actual commercial thing they made itself doesn't even touch on the issue of race.
No,
these people were
we
literally
didn't even
just
cross
talking
our mind.
These people were literally just talking about a picture of William the Refrigerator Perry.
Right.
Right. They were saying, like, it's race because, like, he ain't got, he don't have all his teeth. He's a football player. He's been smashed in the head over and over again. He don't have all his teeth. He's smiling broadly. Right. It's not a great look, but still, it's like, that's what he looked like.
That's what he looks like.
Fucking warrior in the trenches. That's what he looked like. You guys just used a picture of him looking how he looks.
Also, and then
you
got accused of
being racist just for using that. It's like, I kind of feel that way about this Bradley Cooper, Leonard Bernstein thing. It's like that he looked like that. Like,
I feel that we were going for the same thing with our thing as he did with Maestro. So I appreciate that. But also, just for context, in case anyone thinks like, oh, well, y'all went and got the worst picture of William the Refrigerator Perry possible. Actually, what it was it was a clip of William the Refrigerator Perry had done an ad for something with Bill Murray or whatever. And William the Refrigerator Perry says something like, and I guarantee it. And then it freeze frames on him. That's the image we took. So it was an image of William the Refrigerator Perry that he himself had been like, put this in my ad. You know what I'm saying? And then Chris, what he did was we had that freeze framed, and then it pans out and superimposes that logo on our cold clam grill, which Chris had drawn, but he just traced that picture of William the Refrigerator Perry. And like, and dude, when I posted that shit, like, you know this, we are, me and you, and all of us in comedy, but like, especially us with our accents, before I post something, if I think for 2 seconds that there's any type of possibility that it's going to be misconstrued as racist or homophobic or whatever, like, I'm definitely going to at least send it to a couple people and be like, hey, I'm wrong, right? But like, it didn't even cross my fucking mind. Like, and then, you know, and they were like, you should take this down. And I'm pretty sure, like, because me and you were talking about it, what I said to this person was, it's just a picture of William the Refrigerator Perry. If you think that's racist, I think you got problems.
You're right, right. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know what
that,
I mean?
I was about to bring that up. It's like, if you look at a picture like that, you're like, this is racist. I think it says something about you, because it's just like, it's literally just a picture of the guy. So Thomas Wetters, Thomas Whitehouse, this dude with the 8-inch nose we were talking about, he was a sideshow act in England in the, I said 1800s, I think. It's the 1700s. He went around doing sideshow, just existing with a big nose or whatever. And it's funny, like the pictures you see of him, like we put up earlier, it's like he looks like your average Victorian dude. He looks like something from, like I said, a Charles Dickens novel.
With the bird mask.
But with a big ass, with a big ass nose. But, and so, and I think we are kind of, cause he's got like the gray hair and the standard, like Dickensian face and stuff. And I think we are conditioned to see that and be like, you
regal.
Know, exactly. Somewhat like this is a dude who knows big words and hates orphans and whatever else. Right. But like, he's kind of fancy. He walks with a fancy cane. He wears an overcoat, shit like that. I'm not saying this guy didn't do that, but apparently he wasn't that guy. The world's largest nose was not his only issue. This is a quote from the Strand magazine, which was a London magazine of the day, talking about him. It said, thus, if noses were ever uniformly exact in representing the importance of the individual, which I don't know whoever proposed that might be the case. But anyway, they say, this worthy ought to have amassed all the money in Thread Needle Street and conquered all of Europe, for this prodigious nose of his was a compound of the acquisitive and the martial. Again,
my God.
I don't know whoever suggested that the size of your nose was like correlated with your level of success or anything like that.
I mean, but there's like a global conspiracy that some people...
I guess that is true. but in this magazine, they don't even point out, and he's not even Jewish. They don't even bring that up. But anyway, they continue. But either his chin was too weak or his brow too low, or nature had so exhausted herself in the task of giving this prodigy a nose as to altogether forget to endow him with brains. Or perhaps the nose crowded out this latter commodity. At all events, we are told this Yorkshireman expired, nose and all, as he had lived, in a condition of mind best described as the most abject idiocy. So
That's sort of like
this guy was a massive dumbass. Evidently. Yeah. Like he was just a big nose dipshit, and that's what he did. Well, and he lived to the age of 50 in the 1700s, which is pretty, you know, it's a pretty good run for a big nose dumbass.
The way that they were describing that is sort of like the old theory of, like, you know, why dipshits have big dicks. You know, is it God ran out of room? Like they used too much on the dick and didn't have anything left for the brain, or vice versa. And, like, you know, that nose, it kind of looks like God accidentally just put a big dick in the wrong place. That's like exactly extra what dumb, it looks like. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So rest in peace, you big nose dipshit. So,
that's,
all right.
That's
one
funny.
Last thing I'm going to do, and I'll turn it over to you. Found an undertaking that fancy people take sometimes that I thought was interesting. We should talk about on the show. Cho, have you ever heard of the process of gingering? You ever heard of gingering before?
No, but I mean, you know, obviously it can't be the thing that I immediately think of, which is to put ginger in something. Walk gingerly is to, like, take baby steps, right? So to ginger something, I have no idea. I got nothing.
Well, you were close to begin with. It kind of is the process of putting ginger in something. So, So this comes from the world of equestrian, the high society world of horse stuff. They got fancy horses, walking horses, things of that nature. If you want to make
a, I'm
if
a
you
horse,
want,
if you want a walking horse,
walking. If you
get
want to make a horse,
here. I'm trotting here.
If you want to make a horse carry its tail up high and walk with a livelier gait. So it's got livelier, more pronounced gait, right? So it does better at the shows. What you can do is you can shove a ginger root up its asshole. And that will accomplish what you're looking for, evidently. It's called
walking gingerly.
Gingering the horse. So you take a root of ginger and you peel the peel off the outside of it till it's exposed. You shove it up a horse's ass, and all of a sudden that horse walks with a livelier step.
Imagine that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think most people would walk with a livelier step with a fucking ginger root shoved up their ass. But to be clear, this, like most horrific practices, was more common 100, 200 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Until people were like, hey, this is kind of fucked up, right?
Right.
But it still persists in certain areas. What they have now, they have ginger paste now that they'll just rub on the horse's asshole. So you got to go rub something on your horse's asshole if you want it to really, you know, be hot to trot in a contest and whatnot. It also, though, is now illegal in most sanctioned horse shows and stuff. In fact, they have people who go around to the participating horses and they'll swab the horse's asshole. I did not realize how much, like, action a horse's asshole saw.
Yeah.
Because it's like they're either shoving ginger of it, or even if they're not, the good guys are shoving a swab up there. Because that's what they do. They swab the horse's asshole to make sure there's no ginger up there.
Yeah.
To make it do the ginger thing, because that would be cheating and also cruel, right? Because people realized that this was being sussed out at one point along the way, they started using primarily female horses because they could shove it instead of their butt. They could shove it up their vajay, shove it up all the way up that that horse pussy, because it was easier to conceal that way, but had the same effect.
Right.
So, this was a storied pursuit for a long time, now frowned upon, but still sometimes practice gingering a horse. On the same note, have you ever heard of figging? Figging.
Is it shoving a fig up a horse's ass?
Sounds like it. You'd think. So, figging is just the term
for figging to put this ginger up a horse's ass.
Figging is just the term for doing the exact same thing to a human subject. All right.
I figged.
Yeah, but here, you shove ginger up your ass?
Not ginger. I was about to say, I don't know how different the sensations between ginger and menthol are, but one time I'd been in the habit of rubbing weed jelly in my butthole to see if I could get a high off of it, because it's all I had. And one time I did it, but didn't realize that the weed jelly that I had was menthol, and I rubbed it in my asshole, and woo-wee, I walked gingerly.
Right. Well, why don't you elaborate on that experience a little bit more? How unpleasant was that? Because that you're actually touching on exactly what this was meant to do, the whole purpose of this whole thing.
Because it was a lighter, it wasn't like a full, you know, it wasn't like, what's that shit? It wasn't like Icy Hot level, you know, so it wasn't that bad. But I could tell that if it was Icy Hot, that would have not hit
right
at all.
So, whereas with horses, it's called gingering, and it's used to improve their performance in certain fancy horse shows and shit. With humans, it was called figging, and it was meant exclusively as a form of punishment. And it goes back thousands of years. Like, the ancient Greeks used to shove ginger up the butt of malcontent slaves as a form of punishment. They also found, and, you know,
a lot of slaves weren't malcontent.
Yeah,
you know.
Now, yeah,
I'd be pretty malcontent.
Yeah, they didn't have much of a reason to be regular content. You know what I mean?
Right,
like malcontent is the only type of content you're left with when you're a slave.
Sure.
But they found that also, you know, as always, the past steadfastly dedicated to being an abject nightmare, right?
Yeah.
We all know that. So in addition to this being just a form of punishment, they also found that if you clenched your asshole, it hurt a lot more if you were being figged, right? If you had ginger up there and you clenched your asshole, that made it more intense and more extreme, and it hit
the oils
hurt more, right? So, so they started using figging as a like an additional form of punishment when a slave would be caned, because like they would cane a slave
and they
would tense their bare ass, and they would tense up to like take the shot of the cane or whatever. And that didn't hit for these, you know, slave drivers and shit. So to keep them from doing that, they shoved a butt plug of ginger up their ass so that they couldn't tense up to take the shot of the cane. So you got ginger up your ass while getting caned at the same time. Welcome to the past, everybody.
Imagine.
Also, the Wikipedia notes that, like, this lasts about 30 minutes total before the effect wears off. But what you can do, Cho, if you're ever in this position and wondering what you can do with either horses or humans, is you could take the ginger butt plug out and you could shave off the old, you know, butted up layer of ginger, right? To get to the fresh
layer of butt
to
off.
Get to the fresh butt free ginger that you have, and then shove it right back up there, and the process begins anew immediately. So they figured that out too. So yeah, you know, existence is a nightmare, but less of a one than it used to be. So
imagine being such a piece of shit that just beating a person isn't enough. You're like,
right.
See, they tense up there at the end. I don't care for that.
I feel like it's, they're somehow making it not as bad for them. We need to figure out a way around that.
Yeah.
Let's shove this spicy root up their butthole. And that's
Jesus.
What they did. Yeah, Jesus is right. He won there, as with most historical atrocities. But anyway, all right, so those are the things that I had. So let's talk about Robert Evans a little bit.
Let's do it right after this.
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.
And we are back, Airheads. It's time for Hollywood history with Professor Cho on the subject of famed cartoon producer. He didn't produce cartoons. He was just a producer who was a cartoon named Robert Evans, who's legendary in Tinseltown. And I'm looking forward to talking about him a little more. So let's get into it.
Yeah. So firstly, for a lot of people who might be confused, seeing as that we had the dollop people on the show, this is not about Robert Evans from Behind the Bastards, though that is a wonderful podcast you should listen to. Secondly, on Robert Evans, I want to start off by saying I'm not through with the offer. I appreciate you turning me on to it because it's great. But before
the offer, the TV show about the making of The Godfather.
Yeah,
which is on Paramount Plus, I think. Is that where it's at?
Yeah, Paramount Plus. So
yeah.
I watched The Maestro a couple days ago, and I was like, this Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein is the greatest depiction of a person I've seen an actor do in a very long time. It took 3 days for me to see Matthew Good as fucking Robert Evans and kills go, it. My dude, like, fucking destroyed it. Like, it's, you know, sometimes when people do a straight up impression, it's like, that's not good because it kind of takes you out of it. But like, he literally sounds, because I just listened to this fucker's book, like, he's him, right. man. Like, no, it's crazy.
It's where there's a fine line between just like doing an impression, like SNL style impression. There's a fine line between right. that and like becoming the person, yeah. basically. And it's weird. I don't know where that line is drawn. You know what I'm saying? Like,
some
it's weird,
sort of
but
exaggeration.
It, but it is a thing. And yeah, right. So I told you. So yeah, I thought The Offer, if you're into Hollywood shit at all, I recommend The Offer. If you're not, you probably won't be into won't it. Like, yeah. But I watched The Offer and loved it. I watched it before. I knew who Robert Evans was. I knew he was legendary, but I hadn't fucked with him at all. I hadn't ever heard him talk or anything. I just knew him by like legend and stories yeah. about him and stuff. And so I watched the whole series, Matthew Good doing his thing. And I was like, man, he's really pushing the boat out, huh? But I didn't really have a frame of reference. And then like a month or so later, I was on the road and I started watching Robert Evans. I watched The Kid Stays in the Picture, the documentary, which he narrates. And I watched stuff with Robert Evans actually talking and how he looks and stuff. And when I saw that in retrospect, I was like, Jesus Christ, Matthew
Unreal.
Good's fucking murdering that. Like he yeah. was. He was absolutely nailing it, dude. Like,
yeah, I mean,
to perfection.
Yeah, outside his goddamn mind, crushing it. How long ago was The Offer? Like, did he get an Emmy nomination or anything? Because, like, he ought to have.
I don't know. I watched it. I mean, I watched it in the last year. And I also, Al yeah. Ruddy was on WTF with Mark Maron. Al Ruddy, the producer of The Godfather, who is, like, the protagonist of the show, The Offer. When the show came out, he went on WTF with Mark Maron to promote it. And I know all that was in the last year. So I think it was, like, I think it was sometime in 2023 that it came yeah. out, so not
well,
that
great,
old
great stuff. Y'all should definitely watch it, but that's not the point. Robert Evans, so like I'd known about Robert Evans for I won't say my whole life, but like I've always been into like Hollywood and Hollywood stories and shit, so like his name had definitely come up. And I remember, not when I was a kid, but like early teens, you remember Comedy Central, he did have a cartoon, because you mentioned that he did make a cartoon. Like one of his last things that he did, he had a show called Kid Notorious on Comedy Central that was a fictionalized Robert Evans as a cartoon getting into like shenanigans. And I want to say there was like, he was like James Bondy in some ways, but like it was voiced by Robert Evans. The character was Robert Evans. It was called Kid Notorious. And that sort of like re-put him on my map. And then his legend, you know, grew through that with me. But then also one of my favorite lines in, do you remember the movie Stuck on You? Fairly Brothers?
Yeah. Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear were conjoined twins.
Conjoined twins. Yeah. Well, there's a line yeah. in it. There's a fucking, it's my favorite line in the whole movie. So they're sitting there and Matt Damon's talking it up with this girl and he clearly wants some privacy. So he looks over at Greg Kinnear and he's like, that's okay. I've got a book on tape. So he puts his headphones on. He's clearly listening to The Kid Stays in the Picture. And at one point, Matt Damon's trying to have this romantic conversation and Greg Kinnear just looks over and goes, well, that Robert Evans, he banged them all, didn't he? He banged them all. And so that got me, I was thinking about that the other day and I was like, I really got to read this fucking book. And I had no idea, like, everything about Robert Evans is, like, textbook, this is how everyone thinks old Hollywood was, and I think right. it's because, like, all those stories just come from people describing him, you know what I mean? Right. Like, it's just, like, that was him, like, he gets, you know, he's not in the pictures, as they were called then, and he's just fucking at a pool, hanging out in Hollywood, and Norma Shearer just sees him at the pool right. and is like, oh my God, sends her husband down to talk to him. And she's like, hey, I want you to be in my next picture. And he's like, what? I can't do that. I don't act anymore. And she's like, it's with James Cagney. And he's like, sign me up, baby doll. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right. No, people do think like, well, so first of all, other thing, when that happened to him, he was already independently wealthy because him and his right. brother owned like a
selling
women's
pants.
Clothing line. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So he already had a bunch of money. He was just on vacation in Hollywood or whatever. And he gets spotted and they're like, you should be in pictures, kid. And like, that you're right. That's the type of thing like people think happens in Hollywood, like young dreamers and shit think you're going to get off the bus in Hollywood. A limousine is going to pull up by you and stop. Yeah. The window rolls down slowly. Cigar smoke billows out and some fat producer is like, you.
Right. Yeah, right.
And it's like that almost never happens, but it does still kind of happen. Like, it happened to Jennifer Lawrence, apparently. But it also, I reckon that a similar thing happened to Jennifer Lawrence. Also, Chris Pratt. I think that happened.
Really?
The story with Chris Pratt is he was like a beach bum in Hawaii. He's from Minnesota. He ended up in Hawaii, beach bumming, surfing, living in a van, doing the beach bum thing. He was like waiting tables at some resort in Hawaii. It's just so wild that this is the tastemaker who found Chris Pratt. But like Ray Dawn Chong, Tommy Chong's daughter, who she was like a bit of a movie star in the late 80s and stuff. She was in some Arnold movies and shit like that. She was making a movie in Hawaii. He waited on her at a table and she was like, hey, you ever acted? You've been whatever, you know, you should come by whatever. And they put him in that movie and then he became an actor. Now, of course, like that didn't. Whatever that role was, it didn't lead directly to him being Star-Lord. He had to, that got him into the pursuit, and then he spent years struggling at the pursuit before he got to the A-list. But still, like, he wasn't even, as I understand it, he wasn't even thinking about doing anything like that when it first happened, you know? And so it does kind of happen, but it's very, very, very rare. But that's like the classical Hollywood story people think about. But it happened to Robert Evans, too. And then he took it a totally different way.
Yeah, and I was about to say, like, back in Evans' day, like, I definitely think stuff like that happened more. But it was more for, like, it was more like beautiful women. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because, and this is no offense to women. This was just how producers and shit were back in the day. Like, if they saw a beautiful woman, they didn't give a fuck if you could act or not. They just want to know if you look good on screen. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, because, like, you're not really going to be doing much. It's just that you're going to be behind Humphrey Bogart in this scene at a whatever. So, like, as long as you test good, like, you're fucking in. But, like, yeah, so he goes and he does his picture and, you know, does really well. And then, you know, I'm skipping forward a lot, but, like, he ends up being cast. And this is I love this so much. The Sun Also Rises? That was the Hemingway book.
Yeah.
The Sun Also Rises, so he gets cast as the fucking matador. He gets cast as the matador, and, like, he's on, you know, on set. Nobody thinks he's doing good. Like, everybody on the picture had signed a note being like, if this motherfucker is the matador, we ain't working on this goddamn movie. Hemingway hated it. Apparently the only person who didn't, like, Errol Flynn didn't sign the thing because he was like, I don't give a fuck. I'm just here to get my paycheck and, you know, bang an underage lady or whatever. And, you know, that was famously where the title comes from, is the director gets on a bullhorn and goes, hey, the kid stays in the picture. Y'all can all shut the fuck up, you know. So he does this. The Sun Also Rises. And what's funny and ironic is that the movie tanks and the critics hate it, except for everyone loved him as the matador. So he's like, you know, fuck you. And then flashing forward even more, he says in the book that one day he, you know, after all this has happened, he thought, well, okay, surely Ernest Hemingway has, like, come around to me. So he's at a Yankees game and he sees Hemingway in a box and he goes up to him. He's like, hey, Mr. Hemingway, I'm Robert Evans. I just wanted to say hello. And he goes, and Hemingway never even looked up at me. So anyways, years later, I fucked his granddaughter. And he's like, and I told her, he's like, she was in love with me. And I told her, he's like, baby, I got to tell you, part of this is because I know Papa would roll over in his fucking grave, but I can't get enough of you, baby. Then anyways, back to him playing in The Sun Also Rises. That was like a really big pivotal moment in his career when everybody wants him out. But the producer is like, no, the kid stays in the picture. And he was quoted as saying something like, I knew right then I didn't want to be me. I wanted to be him. I didn't want to be a guy who was having decisions made for him. I wanted to be the guy that says, hey, the kid stays in the picture. So he just decides, I'm going to be a fucking movie producer, which, knowing that he has money, like, that makes a lot of sense. But, like, with, like, in The Offer, you know, because Al Ruddy basically does the same thing. But, like, it's not like Al Ruddy had any money. He was, I mean, he had a job. He was working for that Rand place or whatever. But, like, I mean, obviously, watching this and reading his book, producer, you know, is a lot more than just the dude who fronts the money for the thing. But like, before that, I didn't think that you could just aspire to be a producer. I thought you either had a lot of money and you could produce some shit, or you just couldn't do that. Were you in the same boat?
I mean, I was when I was younger. I've listened to so many different podcasts about Hollywood, and there's a whole producers podcast that I've listened to almost every episode of and shit like that along the way. So I knew, like, the word producer is the most variable title in all of Hollywood. Like, sometimes right. It can just mean like sometimes like stars, like actors that are stars, they can be producers on a show or a movie or something just because they like attach their name to it to help it get made, but they don't do anything at all with the production, but they still get paid for it. Sometimes, yeah, some of the producers are the ones who actually come up with the money, figure out the money situation, yeah. Which is like, that's important. And then there's also producers who, like, God, I hate to say this because he don't hit for me, but it's kind of like a Hollywood sort of DJ Khaled thing where it's like, yeah. There's some producers who like, yeah. Find a script that they're like, this should exist. And then they go around and aggregate. They're like, hey, you should be this person in this script. You should direct this script. You should whatever. And they build like a packet the way fucking DJ Khaled, you know, in 2007 was like, hey, Ludacris, you should do a song with fucking Drake who just started or whatever. And it's like, how hard is that to do? But still, these producers, they like put a project together and like get it off the ground. And then so they're like involved from the very beginning. Yeah, sometimes sometimes producers are the ones who like make it happen. So producer can mean a bunch of different things. You could be a money man. You could be an idea man. You could be a name. Like it can be a lot of different shit.
Yeah, it's definitely been bastardized a lot. I mean, I'm sure, you know, regular civilian folks don't really know or care, but like in the industry, it's sort of been bastardized because we know, like, it's like, yeah, well, he didn't really do anything, but he demanded a producer credit because, like, you know, he wants this because he's probably going to leave the show after the third season. But if he's got the producer credit, he's going to get paid for season 7. You know what I mean? And also, like, there's another insider trick that a lot of times people will get there. Because Seinfeld did this with the Seinfeld is you get your agent a producer credit and then you don't have to give them your 10% because the fucking studio is giving them the money, which is a nice little cheat. But so today producer could mean many things. But back then it really was like, you're in charge of, like, you're the showrunner of a goddamn, you know, $4 million, which in that time is $25 million, you know, fucking movie or whatever. And he's like, this is what the fuck I want to do. But, like, without anything under his belt and, like, him just, I think he bought, I can't remember what, he realized, like, okay, I've noticed in Hollywood that if you own the thing, like, that's the shit. So, like, he took his money and just, he started, like, personally optioning books. Like, he would just find books, like, book that hits for me. And he would go, like, hey, you know, have you taken any meetings with anybody? No. I'll give you $10,000 to option your book. You know what I mean? And they're like, okay, great. So then Robert Evans just, like, goes to all these studios and is like, I've got all these books to option or whatever. And without actually having produced a fucking movie, done any of that shit whatsoever. Is it Charles Boonhorn or the Austrian dude?
Bloodhorn.
Yeah. Charles Bloodhorn is just like, you should be running Paramount, kid. and so he does. Like, he's just like the youngest head of Paramount ever. Everybody in Hollywood fucking hates him because they're like, oh, this is just that, you know, he did a couple bit parts in some movies and now he's making all the decisions and shit. But he was just one of these, he had what a producer needed, which was like, he was a very charismatic, amenable dude who could just like get shit done and like, you know, get the people to shake the hands and shake the deals and shit like that. So he starts running Paramount. And another thing that I noticed in the book that I don't know if you remember in it was that, like, aside from, you know, he had money from making ladies' pants or whatever, but like to hear him tell it, he was never actually swimming in money. Like, he was always on the verge of bankruptcy or he was always playing catch up, you know?
Because he spent the shit out of it, right? Yeah, like, he lived large. He bought like a mega mansion and all this type of shit. So like, yeah, he, yeah. I know he was on the verge of financial ruin multiple times, but I think that was largely a result of like his own decisions. He's like, you know, hey, I got a hit. I'm out here hitting. I got a hit. So I got all this stuff that hits, which is expensive. You know, I mean, it happens to fucking happens to first round draft picks every year, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. I also saw like part of it could have been that like he also like he bet big on these projects and sometimes would like have to go in his own pocket for them. And what he would do sometimes, like when he really believed in a project, because and he said a bunch of shit that like all the time rich Hollywood suit people they say, but I don't really believe, which is like, oh, it ain't about the money. I care about the art. You know, I care about the blah, blah, blah. But like, by some of his behavior, like, I definitely believe it in some regards, because there were several times when it's like he had the easy money right here and he's like, no, I really want to do this picture. And they're like, well, you know, we're not giving you the money to do it. And he's like, okay, what if I trade you points on this? You know, because like a producer's going to have points on all these movies, and a point to everybody is a percentage. Like, you know, sometimes Clooney will, let's say, he's like, oh, I really want to be in this movie. Well, we can't pay you. Okay, cool. Well, I'll do it for scale, but I get 40 points on the back end so that, like, I'll make my money later. Well, Evans would, like, trade all of that shit. You know what I mean? Like, he would just be like, all right, I'll give you the points on these. We'll do that. And then it would just, like, backfire in his fucking face. And this movie's a flop. And the next thing you know, it's like, goddamn, I gave 20 points away on Raiders of the Lost Ark. Which was, he didn't give away 20 points on Raiders of the Lost Ark, but in that book, he was talking about someone who fucking, like, God damn it, I wish I could remember this. They traded points with Lucas on something, and they had, like, 20 points on Star Wars, and they gave it back to Lucas so that Lucas would do for him. And
you're talking about the merchandising? The story I've always heard is that Lucas, like, to make that deal happen and everything, he took a percentage of merchandising, which they were like, they didn't think would matter or amount to anything, which has ultimately resulted in billions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Made George Lucas a billionaire. I don't know if that's what you're thinking of.
I know that one too, which is fucking great. But no, there was some story about some fucking bonehead who ended up losing $25 million on Star Wars because I can't remember what it was, but Evans was talking about it.
A couple other stories was like apparent, and I don't know how true any of these are, but two other stories I can think of, I've heard of, both superhero related, was that I've always heard that Robert Downey Jr. got points on the whole MCU for doing Iron Man to begin with, right? So he's got like an insane amount, you know, whatever, fucking hundreds of millions of dollars. And also that years and years before that, that Jack Nicholson did that for the Joker and Batman. And I don't just mean the Tim Burton movie. Again, I don't know if this is true.
The franchise.
What I've heard is Jack Nicholson was like, I ain't the Joker in a comic. I'm not doing that unless you give me points on every Batman movie like ever made. Right. Like, man, the IP. Like, I get a chunk of all the Batman. Again, that may not be true, but that's what I've heard. And if that's the case, then good Lord. Like, some of these deals that have been made, bro, they wild. Just to be in a position to make one of those deals. God damn it.
No, I know, man. I know. And, like, I mean, sometimes, like, when you're a dude like Jack, you've got all the power in the world. Like, it's, hey, this is Jack coming off of the fucking Shining, Cuckoo's Nest, fucking everything he's ever done. And he's like, yeah, I'll do it. But, you know.
Right.
Jack and Robert were very good friends. I'm pretty sure that, actually, yeah, in the book, Robert got Jack his first like starring role, and how it came to be was Jack. Let's see, I can't remember who it was they wanted to cast in some movie, but fucking Evans had seen a test of Jack, or no, Jack Nicholson was just there on set with somebody, and he's like, no, I want the dude.
That was Evans who did that?
Was it
in Chinatown? Because I've heard that story too. I've heard that they did a screen test for another guy in Chinatown, and Jack Nicholson was in the screen test, but he wasn't the dude screen testing. He, like, in the story I heard was in the screen test, the guy actually screen testing for the role was in, like, a fancy bar and took a drink from a waiter or something like that, and Jack Nicholson played the waiter who walked up and flashed his big Jack Nicholson smile and stuff that he has, and was like, whatever, and the producer was like, who's that guy? And they're like, oh, no, this is the guy we're bringing. And he's like, no, the guy with the smile, who's that guy?
It
may not be Chinatown.
It wasn't Chinatown.
It wasn't Chinatown because Jack was around before that. I've heard a story about Jack Nicholson that goes that way.
It was Robert Evans.
He was just on a tape for somebody else, And some producer, which I guess was Robert Evans, was like, no, who's the dude with the smile? Who's that guy?
Yeah.
And that led to Jack Nicholson's like whole career, which is wild.
That's exactly what happened. And like Robert fought for him like big time, and they finally get him in a meeting. And Robert Evans is just like, not really seen much from him. Just like, he's like, I just see this guy and I know he's just got it. Like, he's just a fucking star, which like, you know, it's easy for us to like, now that we know Jack, to be like, well, yeah, that should have been obvious. But it's like, you know, you never know in that situation. And Robert Evans just betting everything on him. And the story that I heard was they were like, we're offering it to you, this feature. It's going to be, I want to say it was him and like, it wasn't Meryl Streep, but it was some big name lady. And they go, we're going to give you $10,000 for to do the picture. And Jack's agent's sitting there and he's like, yes, absolutely. Of course, like you've had nothing. And now they're going to give you 10 grand for a feature. The most he's ever made on anything is like $75. And Jack is like, yeah, you know, calm down. You don't speak for me right now. Robert, can I speak to you from through the window over here? And they get over there and Jack looks at him, who again has no clout, no nothing. And he goes, can I get 15? I've had some bills come up. And he goes, yeah, we can do 15 or whatever. So like, that's just like, you were talking about to be in the position to make those deals. Just really hit for me that like Jack was in no position to do anything, but like he was just born fucking Jack Nicholson and was like, I'm going to ask for more. And then he got it.
Right. But circling back to Robert Evans, he's like kind of known as being like the shark of all sharks of this era. Right. Like that's right. Part of what the thing that he did, like, despite the fact that he was like a women's clothing producer who then was an like out of nowhere actor who suddenly became a producer, still he had an aptitude for it. Like, because I think going back to Chinatown, I don't know why I keep connecting Robert Evans to China, but
well,
he
produced it, and in the second one, The Two Jakes, Robert Evans was supposed to play the other Jake.
A story I heard about Chinatown with Robert Evans was that Faye Dunaway, who ended up starring in it, she was like, they wanted her, and Jack wanted her. Jack Nicholson was already attached, and he wanted Faye Dunaway, and he was like, we got to have Faye or whatever. And Evans, in dealing with Faye's agent, was like, we'll give you this amount. We'll say it's $20,000 or whatever. Well, I don't know. This was years and years ago, but whatever it was, we'll give you $20,000. And her agent was like, that's insulting. She wouldn't show up for that amount of money. You know, what are you talking about? And Evans started saying, he was like, well, you know, I mean, listen, we want her in the movie, but like Jane Fonda's interested too, right? So like, you know, and she's willing to do it for this, so I don't know what to tell you. And like the guy went back to Faye and was like, oh, tell him, you know, if Jane Fonda wants to do it, you know what, tell him we'll do it. We'll do it for 15. I'm butchering the details of this. Right. But she comes back, she's like, we'll do it for 15 or whatever, if Jane Fonda's in. And they got her for less. And then Evans told Faye Dunaway's agent after the deal was signed, he was like, hey, Jane Fonda never knew anything about this movie. Right. Like none of that ever happened. Like I made that all up. But thanks for playing though. And he would do shit like that all the time, I reckon.
That's a classic example of a thing that I morally hate, and it's a terrible thing to do. But when I hear that someone did it, it hits for me to hear that. You know what I mean? Like I know exactly
what you mean. Because if anything, you and I. Not that we're remotely near her situation, but if anything in that story, we should relate to like Faye Dunaway or whatever. You know what I mean? And hear that story and feel like, what? That's so fucked up. These fucking snakes out here. That's what they always do or whatever. But I'm so far removed from it entirely. I hear it and I am kind of like, that's some G shit.
Yeah. Well, just, I think
it's just stone cold business, buddy. I don't know what to tell you.
I think because that happens in wrestling all the fucking time. But like, I think it just depends on the person, because like the more I learn about Robert Evans and you see him and you know, watching Matthew Good play him, you're like, I want to be this dude's buddy. Like if I heard that same story, but it was Harvey Weinstein, I'd be like, that fucking piece of shit. Like, you know, God damn it, Harvey. Like you've got big pockets. Just be honest with people. But yeah, with Robert Evans, I'm like, well, this guy was making it all up as he went. He used to sell ladies' knickers, you know, come on. So
a related story there, you know, we were like tiny, tiny kids when this was happening. We've all heard like Arnold and Sylvester Stallone had a big rivalry in the 80s, right? Like a huge rivalry.
Yeah.
And there was a movie, a script that got passed around that Arnold read, and he was like, this is a piece of shit. Fucking who the fuck would ever do this? And then he like put the word out there. He's like, let everybody know I'm very, very interested in this. I'm dying to do this. We can just get the numbers right. Make sure Sly hears about it, right? And Sylvester Stallone heard about it, and he was like, Arnold wants to do it, but he wants to do it for how much? Okay, well, I'll do it. I'll do it for this much instead. And he like went down a little bit, and he's like, I'll do that movie. And that movie was Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, which Arnold knew was a massive piece of shit and had no interest in doing. He like tricked Sylvester Stallone into doing it just to fuck with him.
So
which
funny.
Is like so funny, dude.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
And that's different than the Dunaway thing, because like
it is,
you know, because like, you know,
well, those are two peers kind of like going at each other or whatever, you know what
and
I mean?
And also, so Sly like, still got a job, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, no, that type of shit, all the stuff that 50 Cent has done, that type of fuckery, like it's, you know, that was a dickhead thing what he did to Ja Rule. Because like, I still don't know what Ja Rule did to him. I don't know. I have no idea. But it is fucking funny. But anyways, no. So Robert Evans was actually supposed to play the second Jake in the two Jakes in the sequel, like, and Jack really wanted him. And there was some fuckery on that too, where like the studio head didn't want Evans to do it. So like they brought Evans in and was just like, hey, sorry, you're going to have to step down. Jack doesn't want you. And Robert's like, what the fuck? And so he spends like a whole day just like fuming, pissed off at Jack. Goes to Jack, and Jack's like, I haven't even talked to that motherfucker. What are you talking about? And like, that was them doing their shady, like, you know, we don't want to have to be the one to say it, so we're going to pit these motherfuckers against each other, whatever. Anyways, as you know, he ends up not playing Jake, not Cahill, but I can't remember the other Jake's name. Any fucking ways. He also, you know, he was married to Ally McGraw, big time starlet, who he was always trying to get cast in things. Much to the chagrin of like a lot of the studio execs, because he was just like constantly trying to put her in things. She wanted to play. Let's see. He basically bought The Great Gatsby for her. Like that was his birthday present to her. It's like, I bought The Great Gatsby, and because I know that you want to play Daisy. And then they go to do it, and I'm pretty sure Robert Redford was just like, she can't fucking play. What the fuck are you talking about? And like, it didn't happen. And they end up divorcing, but that's because Ally started fucking Steve McQueen after Robert had put them together in a movie. And like him and Steve were like boys. But what's funny, this is what's crazy about Robert Evans. And this is what like really lends credence to that whole, the only thing these motherfuckers give a shit about is money. Is that like he stayed boys with McQueen, and him and Ally McGraw stayed like best friends until the day they died. And like he even, so Ally, now granted, a big reason for that is because he had his one and only child with Ally McGraw. So right. Like, you know, I could see if me and Amber get divorced, obviously we're staying in each other's lives. You know what I mean? Right. Like that's going to happen. But like they celebrated their 35th wedding anniversary, even though they divorced after five. Because, and the Robert Evans quote was something, I'm paraphrasing, was something like, I doubt you'll find two people who after 35 years still love each other, especially even people who are actually married. You know what I mean? He's like, so I think it's something worth celebrating. But he was like that. Like, he'd be with women, he'd cheat on them, they'd cheat on him, and they were all just like, you know, super friendly. And, you know, Bogdanovich comes up a lot in this book, and that was like his deal too. Like I was reading something about Bogdanovich not long ago, and like him and his ex-wife of like 30 years made a movie together in like 2015 or some shit. And like, it's just crazy. Like it makes me feel like me and you truly aren't artists, you know, because right. Like, because in their mind, they're like, yeah, we weren't good together in marriage, but we can create things together. I'm like, bro, if Amber cheated on me, I couldn't even create a goddamn Excel spreadsheet with that bitch. There ain't no way in hell, you know?
Well, your priorities are just different. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, that's what you started this whole thing off by saying. Like, they care about different things. You know what I mean? Like, these people that are, all these people involved are like tastemakers and gatekeepers, or they have some kind of power or something like that. So all the rest of the people involved put the personal shit aside to like, hey, let's all keep making more money and doing the thing or whatever, because that's what they actually care about. It's also alien and wild as hell to me too, but that's just how
Although,
they are.
I guess if you think about it, those films are like their babies, and me and Amber would put everything aside to raise Bane, so maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. They just, that whole Hollywood, like, I fuck him, he fucks you, we all fuck each other. Ah, hell, whatever. You know, yeah, she was my old lady, but hey, Steve, you're the new hot guy in town. Of course, darling. Yeah, I'll still put you in the picture. What are you talking about? Huh? Anyways, he also was huge buddies with, this is where I was, while reading the book, I was like, I fucking love this guy. I mean, because I'm going, okay, so far there's been, now granted, this is his autobiography. He wouldn't bring up like any type of sexual abuse allegations or whatever, but like, I've never heard him. It's like, it seems like he was a pussy hound, but it was all on the up and up. And I'm like, man, I really want to be this guy's friend. And then he goes into this whole fucking long thing about how one of his best friends was Henry Kissinger. And I'm like, God damn it. And he apparently, so he like, not only was he really good friends with Henry Kissinger, but like he was one of Henry Kissinger's top advisors, you know, okay. Like when Kissinger was like in a rut or something, he would call Robert Evans and like, you know, like per Robert Evans in the book, like sometimes would like breach national security and tell Robert Evans all this shit. Being like, what would you do? You know, and Robert Evans would always be like, Henry, I'm a fucking movie producer. I'm not, you know, and he's like, yeah, that's why I'm asking you. He goes, because like, I'm too close to it, man. Like, I need someone who don't know how this shit to work. Just, you know, give me your, you know, your fucking like out of the box idea. And apparently it was like, it was Robert Evans' idea for when Nixon was wanting to fire Kissinger or some shit. And Kissinger knew it, and he was like, man, I'm fucked. And he goes to Robert Evans. He's like, what the fuck do I do? So Robert Evans like takes a night to think on it, and he comes back to Kissinger and he's like, resign, you know, or something like that. He's like, what? He goes, take out a fucking 2-page ad resigning or whatever. And so like Kissinger does, and then like it completely undercuts what Nixon was wanting to do. So then Nixon has to come back to him because now he's got all this public approval and shit like that. And so he kept his job or something. And it was all fucking Robert Evans' idea. And it was him using like, this is what I would do if it was a Hollywood matter. You know what I mean? This is what I would do. And he basically goes on to say, he's like, you know, come to find out, Hollywood and politics, not that much different. We just make pictures, they make legislation, but at the base level, it's all the fucking same thing. It's all about who you know, it's all about how you present yourself, it's all about who you're fucking and who you know someone else is fucking, you know?
It's funny, I don't disagree with him that Hollywood and DC, Hollywood and politics are very similar in a lot of ways, but it's funny to, it's funny and morbid to think that like Robert Evans was on a coke-fueled bender sitting in a hot tub in the Pacific Palisades or something like that and just had it come to him. It's like, we should bomb Cambodia.
They'll never see it
but
coming.
But you'll be very, yeah, very cinematic. Yeah, unexpected twist in the third act. What if we bomb neutral Cambodia? I'm going to call Henry up and let him know that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a fun, again, funny is not the right word, but it's wild to imagine something like that might have happened, considering he was like one of Kissinger's closest advisors or something, you know, like it's weird. I mean,
my only thought on why it wouldn't have happened was that like Robert Evans did seem like a make love, not war kind of guy in a way. Mm-hmm. But like at the same time, cocaine is a hell of a drug. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it very well, because like those were the problems that, because like Kissinger's like when he's talking to you about his problems, like he's not gonna pitch it as like Cambodia's innocent and blah blah blah. He's gonna pitch it to you. He's like, look, man, no matter what we do, it's gonna seem like we're war criminals. But like realistically, in the office, our job is to make the decisions that are hard to make. So like I could see Evans being like, we'll do the thing that no one will think. Bomb the fucking innocent rice kids, you know? I don't know. Don't hit. But then anyways, you know, that's all I remember about Robert Evans right now. He had a stroke, don't hit. Died. He'll definitely get brought up later because I'm finishing the offer and I want to talk about Al Ruddy because that motherfucker's something else and wild. Yeah.
Yeah, he ended up hitting for me. Like I said, the reason I even found the offer to begin with was because he went on WTF to promote it. And I don't listen to every episode of WTF at all, but I check in, see who Maron is talking to. And if it's
they're
I
always that, great.
I didn't know who Al Ruddy was, but I saw he was producer of The Godfather, and I was like, I'll check it because I love old Hollywood shit. One of my favorite episodes of the past like 5 years. It led me to that show, which I liked a lot. But also that dude rules, man.
He's awesome.
I'm not saying he's not a monster or whatever, ultimately, probably. I don't know. But like he was a damn good time. And also like very self-aware, I thought Al Ruddy.
Yeah.
Like, I know we texted about like Al Ruddy talked about some of his other projects, like a movie with fucking Elliot Gould and a boxing kangaroo that he tried to make. And he talks about it. And he talks about it in terms of like, I don't know what the fuck that was supposed to be. Yeah, yeah. And so it's a great episode. But yeah, it's a good time. I'll also say if you're into, I'm sure plenty of y'all have probably seen and heard this because I first saw this at like 3 a.m. on Stars when I was 18 years old. And it's been circulating ever since. If you like these types of stories, fucking Kevin Smith, the director, has a couple of clips you can find. He used to go around to colleges and do Q&As, and Stars made like a 4-hour special out of it. And you can find these clips where like people ask him one question, a simple question. And Kevin Smith, I think he's a lot like me, except he hits harder. He goes on.
I look just alike too.
I know we do look a lot alike. Yeah, I know. I did a thing for Attention Media once. And when it came out,
everything you do is for attention. Sorry.
This is when I was about 40 pounds heavier or whatever. Yeah. And it came out and it was like, I didn't realize Kevin Smith had gotten fat again. Why is he talking about this stuff? So. And I remember when Kevin Smith had that heart attack, you sent me the picture they took of Kevin Smith post heart attack. And you were like, I literally thought you had had a heart attack because it looks just fucking like me. So anyway, yeah, me and Kevin Smith, we do share a lot of similarities. But anyway, if you like this type of shit, you can Google Kevin Smith Superman movie story if you've never seen it. And he tells this long, elaborate story.
That's the Nick Cage one, right?
So there was supposed to be a movie where Nick Cage played Superman, directed by Tim Burton, written by Kevin Smith right after Clerks and Mallrats, and produced by this guy, John Peters, who's almost like a more insane version of Robert Evans.
Oh, and, get out of here.
Bro, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's just Kevin Smith standing at a podium telling the story of how it all went down. But it's fucking incredible. It includes so much Hollywood lunacy and ravenry. It's unreal. And it's absolutely hilarious. So I recommend that to people.
Yeah, that's my tip top, like, number one fucks with shit is, like, old Hollywood stuff. And I'm super glad that, like, this show exists because I feel like it fits. So I don't have to just, like, shoehorn it into things. I'm upset. Right. I'm upset that I'm sick this week. So I wasn't able to go into, like, more detail. But, you know, all the more reason for next week to be a banger. So thank you for putting up with my snot nose, Trey. We've got some air mail.
Let's do it.
Subject line, sexy travel experts needed. Hey guys, my husband and I are spending a week in a cabin in Pigeon Forge soon. I can think of no one better to ask for travel tips than y'all. I'm not big on rides, so should I go to Dollywood? I do love Queen Dolly, long may she reign. Is it worth it to go to some of these shows? You know, the ones with the horses and shit. Favorite place to eat and or drink? I'm a chef from New Orleans, so we love eating and drinking. Yeah, well, you're going to be disappointed.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Anyway, yeah. I got y'all if you ever come down here. Ooh, hell yeah. Chef in New Orleans got us whenever we come down there. Sign me the fuck up, baby. I know how much you love my city. Mardi Gras is fast approaching, and my husband and I are experts when it comes to reveling. Contrary to popular belief, it's actually quite family friendly. Trey, bring those boys down here and let's fill them up with beads. Corey, you might want to wait a few years. Mardi Gras would be an awesome Venn diagram or Professor Cho topic. It's fancy. It's trashy. It has a weird, crazy history. Love y'all like chicken. It's okay to say my name, Chef Katie.
Chef Katie.
Oh, let's give her a plug. Owner of the Rosemary and Rue Cafe in New Orleans. Based on the fact that she's an airhead alone, if you're in the area, it is a must go.
Next time I go to New Orleans, which is, for the record, my favorite American city. It's your message seemed to imply that you know that. You've heard me say that before, but it's true. Next time I go back, I'll have to check that out, Chef Katie. Also, Chef Katie, to me, as a man who's married to a Katie, Chef Katie, to me, sounds like an oxymoron.
Exactly.
Because mine can't cook for shit, but that's okay. That's fine. But, yeah, no, we're definitely going to take you up on that. Pigeon Forge, I mean, like Corey said, he got halfway through the message. He was like, yeah, you're going to be disappointed. I'm from Tennessee. I lived in Knoxville. I lived in East Tennessee for years. I got a lot of love in my heart for Pigeon Forge. Basically, the way I've always felt about Pigeon Forge and Sevierville and Gatlinburg and all that is, like, if you go into it knowing that it's real dumb and real cheesy and all that shit, and you're just, like, open to the experience, I think you'll have a good time.
Me too.
If you're, like, a legitimate – you sound like you're a legitimate chef who has maybe higher standards than that – I don't know how that's going to go. If you're a huge Dolly Parton devotee, I think you go to Dollywood and you won't be disappointed because everything Dolly related hits for Dolly Parton devotees, as it should. But, it's a fundamentally absurd place, that part of East Tennessee. There's nothing else. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun, but it's like patently ridiculous in every way. And I can't really make a, like, you know, people with actual taste and stuff, I can't make a solid, legitimate defense of it other than to say, like, look, I'm a fucking Tennessee trailer baby, and I love that shit. But it is silly. Tis a silly place indeed.
To be fair, when I said, just to clarify, when I said you'll be disappointed, I meant that purely as you being a chef and for the food. I didn't mean to imply that, like, anyone who goes to Gatlinburg will be, or Pigeon Forge will be disappointed, because as Trey said, like, if you know the deal and you go there knowing the deal, I think it's one of the best types of that deal that there is, you know, on earth. Like, it's, you know, I enjoy it. All I'd say is, you know, just hit up the pancake houses, just stay in that kind of wheelhouse. Like, don't try any, like, you know, they'll have, like, oh, the famous ribs of blah, blah, blah. They don't hit. Like, stay with, you know, just fried chicken on a stick, saltwater taffy, fudge, and pancakes, and you should be great.
Yeah. If you are nature people, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park is unassailable. Like, I don't care what your standards are. So there's that. So if you go up and do some nature shit, that's fun.
The Apple Barn, I think, is actually a good restaurant. It's a long wait, and maybe it's not as good anymore, but it's a little breakfast place. I think it's fucking pretty good. So, yeah, all right. Subject line, it's not lead, you idiots, plus toxic tribalism. Hi, I was listening to y'all's episode on New Year's traditions, and it was really fascinating, but that thing about melting lead on New Year's Eve in Finland and Germany, that ain't quite right. We ain't that stupid that we would actually melt lead indoors. Well, not since 2017. we used to have a TIN, a tin, okay, they spelled it all caps. I thought it was an acronym, that indeed contained lead, but that's been banned for containing unhealthy amounts of, yes, lead. Now we use tin or some kind of wax. But one weird tradition we have in Finland is our cuisine of choice, which is cheap wieners and potato salad. Hits. Why this is, I have absolutely no idea. And y'all were also talking about stupid tribalism in fandoms. I imagine Corey would know about the absolute worst at the moment, which is in wrestling. Folks pick either AEW or WWE or New Japan or TNA and then shit online on the other brand. Now, I watch AEW because it's a pain to watch it in the middle of the night across the pond, and I only have so much energy in me, and I like their style more. But why the hell would I or anyone else troll the other fans just so one can feel superior somehow? It's just idiotic. I don't know how Corey felt in the 90s with WCW, but I imagine the internet, Reddit, and all have made it infinitely worse. But love y'all like chicken. Love the show. Love the book. Sincerely, Eero from Finland. E-E-R-O. Eero, you think?
E-E-R-O. Yeah. Eero, I guess. Eero. It's weird that we've got these, like, Scandinavian fans, evidently. Like,
When I see the subject lines and stuff, and I know that it's something like, it must be the same person, but it's never the same person. It really hits for me.
Maybe we're breaking through in Scandinavia. I don't know. I didn't see that coming. But, yeah, that's exciting.
I wish more people in our home country liked us. That
would
hit.
It is funny that he's like, he gets super defensive in the subject line and everything. He's like, we don't do that lead shit. We haven't done that since 2017.
Yeah, that really
sure,
for
the 4,000 years before that, us us lunatic Vikings were pouring lead in the cold water and then prognosticating based off of it. But ever since, you know, 6 years ago, we have stopped.
Well, there you go. There's the airmail. Trey, tell everybody. Oh, by the way, and I forget that for new listeners, if I don't say this, they won't know. You can send us your airmail at puttingonairs@gmail.com, and we really appreciate you doing so. Like, subscribe, download, tell all your friends, share our YouTube. We really appreciate y'all. Trey, where are you going to be in the next couple weeks, Bubba?
The first shows I have in 2024, I'm going to be in Charlottesville, Virginia at the Paramount Theater, I believe. So come and see me for that. It's important that you come out all that area of Virginia. And then after that, I'm going to Florida for a little bit. And then after that, who knows? So go to Trey Crowder. I mean, people know. I just don't know right now. If you go to TreyCrowder.com, TreyCrowder.com, you can see all the upcoming dates. Come and see me. Also at TreyCrowder.com, you can find a link to our book, me and Cho's book, which has been referenced a couple times around here and over yonder, a comedic travel guide. It's a lot of fun. Check it out. If you go on Audible, you can get us reading it to you, which is a good time. So, yeah.
Yeah, buy our book. I'm not touring right now, staying at home with the kids, so you can find me at BonusCorey.com. I hope you subscribe. It's a fun romp. BonusCorey.com. But other than that, listen to all the other pods in the Skewniverse. Take care of yourself and stay fancy. Mazer fuckers.
Skew.
Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.